1001 song that we've got. Well, it's only one song, but the song that we start off with is Madonna and Into the Groove. Into the Groove appeared on Madonna's film Desperately Seeking Susan, and is a and Madonna is in a downtown club dancing to this magical tune floating above the sound system. It's a black groove with a sweet, limited white tune on the top. There's Madonna, all thrift shop chic, dragging the straight world into subterranean paradise. All the magic of the 80s is right here. The film was a crucial step in Madonna's career, not least because it gave the diva the idea that she could act well. More importantly, it was a film about the gap between downtown and the suburbs. Madonna's character was an update of Holly Golightly, but the difference between Madonna and Truman Capote's heroine that is that Madonna has no guilt. She was slumming. This was the reality, and it was more attractive than the AstroTurf Barracalage, New Jersey world. In a way, though, Susan destroyed the downtown by exposing it to the mass culture. The mystery and delight of a nightclub is all in the slight air of this song. And this is Madonna and Into the Groove, right here on Waiheke Radio. And you can dance for inspiration.
Yeah.
Madonna and Into the Groove right here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4. Don't forget, we're also live streaming on www.waihekeradio.org.nz. That's for all of you lovely people who, for some reason or another, whatever it is, cannot pick up Waiheke Radio on your actual radio. You can always look us up online and look up all the other good things that are there as well. Good things that are there, this is one of which, or will be soon, because it is currently a good thing here. That made very little sense. But what I was referring to was the Monkees and Going Down, which is our next track. And the Monkees suffered from accusations that they couldn't play their instruments and were therefore not a legitimate rock and roll band. They were created specifically for a TV program and didn't help their cause in this matter. However, many of the most credible artists of the period, such as them and the Byrds, didn't play on their records either. It matters little now except to marvel at Going Down, on which the Monkees wrote an extremely complex arrangement. Composed by the Monkees and lyricist Diane Hildebrand, who was bassist Peter Tork's girlfriend at the time, the lyrics are a free-form jazz riff that Mickey Dolenz charges into, capturing the intricate cross-rhythms of the words. Mike Nesmith plays guitar and Peter Tork plays bass, with Davy Jones on percussion, the legendary jazz arranger Shorty Rogers backing with jazzy bright horn charts. The tune is based on Mose Ellison's jazz blues standard Parchman Farm, but the Monkees just tear it apart. Whatever their shortcomings in the beginning, by the time they cut Going Down, the Monkees were as sophisticated as any of their hipster friends. Going Down has a sublime mix of metaphors and sly wit, and Dolenz just explodes with his delivery. And this is the Monkees and Going Down.
Suck it to me. Floating in the river with a saturated liver, and I wish I could forgive her, but I do believe she meant it when she told me to forget it, and I bet you will regret it when they find me in the morning wet and drowned. And the wood gets round, going down, going down. I'm coming up for air, it's pretty stuff under there. I'd like to say I didn't care, but I forgot to leave a note, and it's so hard to stay afloat. I'm soaking wet without a boat, and I knew I should have taken off my shoes. It's front page news, going down. Must have had another day that didn't need this extra weight. I wish that I could see the way to show. I don't want no more. Going down, I'm going down. And now I see the left, I let it slip, but all the way I made it. Should have learned to swim instead of naturally got me stuff. I can't believe it. Why I took my life again. My tummy pump, I can't believe they drink this stuff in town. This dirty brown. So getting old, I'm hungry, sleepy, wet and cold. She told me to forget it nice. I should have taken her advice. I only want to go on home. I'd gladly leave that girl alone. What a way to spend the night. If I don't drown, I'll die of fright. My pappy taught me how to float, but I can't swim a single note. He threw me in to teach me how. I stayed there floating like a mama cow, and now I've floated way downstream. No, this has to be a dream. If I could find my way to shore, I'd tell me.
getting light. Everything will be alright. Think I finally got the knack of just floating and lazy on my back. I never really liked that town. I think I'll ride the river down, just moving slow and floating free. There's a river swinging under me, waving back to the slopes on shore. I should have thought of this before I float on down to New Orleans and pick up on some swinging scenes. I'm gonna know a better day. I'm gonna get moving all the way, going down. I'm gonna go down. I'm going down. Back, back, back to New Orleans. Back home. I'm gonna go down.
The Monkees and Going Down. Right here on YAQ Radio. And this is 1001 Songs. And I'm Seth. And next up we've got for you George Jones and He Stopped Loving Her Today. George Jones' solution to his alcoholism was to start using cocaine. By 1980... he was as much of a wreck as his career. One man who stood beside him was producer Billy Sherrill, who found this song and produced the session that put Jones back on the top of the charts. According to Jones in his autobiography, "The song is about a man who loved a woman so much it killed him when she left. He said he would love her until he died, and only on his deathbed did he stop." Billy loved He Stopped Loving Her Today. He said he was unable to sleep the night after first hearing the song, but he thought it was incomplete. Putnam and Braddock killed the song's main character too soon in their early versions. And what does it say? It says Bobby Braddock and Curly Putnam in the writing credits up there. It doesn't say when it was written, but that's what it says under the writing credits. And Toby Criswell says here that they killed the song. Not quite sure what to make of that, but you make of it what you will. Billy kept telling them to kill the guy at a different time and then have the woman come to his funeral. The writers thought that might be too sad, and Billy did too, but he knew the song on a scale of 1 to 10 was about 8. He saw it as a potential 11. Sherrill cut the track at Columbia's Nashville studio, laying down the basic track live. The vocals and especially the spoken word section took quite a while to get right. Jones said that while he had no problem singing while drunk, he couldn't speak without slurring. Such was his drinking that four lines took months to record. It took them a while, but they were striving for something a bit out of the normal, said engineer Ron Snake Reynolds. They knew that they had something special. Especially Billy, I think. But one of the thing that was kind of funny about it was that the melody was so close to "Help Me Make It Through the Night," and that George kept singing the melody to "Help Me Make It Through the Night." He couldn't get out of his head, and that just gave him a bit of a problem early on. They took their time to get the narration just right. It was worth it, as Jones writes in his autobiography. The song saved his career. "I went up from a $2,500 act who promoters feared wouldn't show up to an act that earned 25,000 plus a percentage of the gate receipts. This was big money for a country artist 16 years ago. To put it simply, I was back on the top. Just that quickly. I don't want to belabor this comparison, but a four-decade career had been salvaged by a three-minute song." Wonder if he actually talks like that. I quite like that voice. Maybe I should work on it. Anyway, this is George Jones, and He Stopped Loving Her Today.
He said, "I'll love you till I die." She told him, "You'll forget in time." As the years went slowly by, she still preyed upon his mind.
kept her picture on his wall. Went half crazy now and then, but he still loved her through it all, hoping she'd come back again. Kept some letters by his bed. Did in 1962, he had underlined in red every single "I love you." I went to see him just today. Oh, but I didn't see no tears. All dressed up to go away. First time I'd seen him smile in years. He stopped loving her today. It placed a wreath upon his door, and soon they'll carry him away. He stopped loving her today. You know, she came to see him one last time. Oh, and we all wondered if she would. And it kept running through my mind, this time he's over her for good. He stopped loving her today. Stop loving her today.
That was George Jones and "He Stopped Loving Her Today," and this is Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. You're listening to 1001 Songs, and I'm Seth, and this is me, and this is my show, and this is Elvis Costello and the Attractions, and Radio Radio. On the cusp of global stardom, Elvis Costello wrote a song attacking mainstream radio, announcing, "I just want to bite the hand that feeds me." It was possibly his finest moment, just as he kept spewing out the bile. Attractions, newly in place, The Costello Show, who were also hitting strides with Steve Neve's squeaking Vox Continental organ. Although the song is an attack on the perilous state of the radio waves, Costello's lyrics really nail everybody in the supposedly activist late 70s. "Some of my friends just sit around in the evening, and they worry about the times ahead. Everybody else is overwhelmed by indifference and the promise of an early bed. You either shut up or you get cut out. They don't want to talk about it. It's only inches on the reel-to-reel." Costello was on a roll. It had only been a couple of months since his first album, My Aim Is True. And then he was anointed the premier lyricist of whatever the hell was a-happening these days. He appeared to be the punk rocker and the music establishment could understand. And this is Elvis Costello and the Attractions and Radio Radio. And the light night dialed.
Seriously thinking about hiding the receiver when the switch broke, 'cause it's old. They're saying things that I can hardly believe. They really think we're getting out of control. Radio is the sound salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. They say you better listen to the voice of reason, but they don't give you any choice, 'cause they think that it's treason. So you have
had better do as you were told. You better listen to the radio. I wanna bite the hand that feeds me. I wanna bite that hand so badly. I wanna make them wish they'd never seen me. Some of my friends sit around every evening and they worry about the times ahead. But everybody else is overwhelmed by indifference and the promise of an early bed. To shut up or get cut out. They don't wanna hear about it. It's only inches on the reel to reel. And the radio is in the hands of such a lot of fools trying to anesthetize the way that you feel. Radio is a sound salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. They say you better listen to the Viceroy reason. But they don't give you any choice, 'cause they think that it's so you had better do what you were told. You better listen to the radio. What if our radio, Bible as a radio? What if our radio, 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 radio,
That was Elvis Costello and Radio Radio. And this is Waiheke Radio. And this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. Next, we got David Bowie and Young Americans. According to Tony Visconti, Bowie's third reinvention of the decade came to him in a phone call out of the blue. David said, "I've got the most fantastic band lined up for the next album. I'm really into black music." This was by transatlantic phone call, and I said, "Great, who have you got?" And he said, "Willie Weeks on the bass, Andy Newmark on drums, and this guy called from New York called Carlos Alomar." And I said, "Say no more, I'll be on the next plane." Bowie was on a string of three hit albums in the United States, each bigger than the last. His stage show was the state of the art. His band had reinvented rock, and then Bowie discovered disco. The Young Americans album picked up the sounds of Philadelphia. The funky but chic new style of R&B was pretty much off the radar for most rock fans, but Bowie embraced it fully. His cocaine addiction might also have helped the taste for fast and choppy guitar. Essentially, though, Bowie was simply doing what all good mods do and picked up on the American R&B artists were doing. The first song recorded was Young Americans. However, despite the fact that I was so tired, there was an electrifying atmosphere that night, and we recorded the Young Americans track, and the next week or two went down like a breeze. But towards the end, that album did get very strange because we didn't know what we were doing. David did mostly live vocals, and although all the songs were written, they were being heavily rearranged as time went on, but nothing was organized, as it turned out to be one enormous jam, said Tony Visconti. During his stay in New York, Bowie befriended John Lennon and they recorded a version of the Beatles' Across the Universe and a collaboration, Fame, which was Bowie's first number one US single. Young Americans, however, topped the R&B charts. The song gave a whole new lease of life to an artist who was beginning to burn out. "Young Americans," said Bowie, "is about a newlywed couple who don't know whether they really like each other. Well, they do, but they don't know if they do or they don't. It's a bit of a predicament." Bowie's departure from Dress Up annoyed his fans, but showed the sense of the winds of change. The next 2 years of disco would change the face of popular music, but by then, Bowie would have gone from disco too. And this is David Bowie and Young Americans.
pulled in just behind the bridge. He lays her down, he frowns. Gee, my life's a funny thing. Am I still too young? He kissed the van and there. She took his ring, took his babies. It took him minutes, took her nowhere. Heaven knows he'd have taken anything. Was a young American.
Young American, young American. She was the young American.
All night. But she was the young American. Standing right through the picture window, she finds a slinky vagabond. Because as she passes, avoiding my steam. Heaven forbid she's taking the thing. But the freak and his title for nothing. This is a step and cuts his hand. Showing nothing, it swoops like a song. She cries, where have all Papa's heroes gone?
All night.
She wants a young American.
David Bowie and Young Americans right here on Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. FM. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. I'm Seth Tetley-Jones, and I've got a track for you that just about everybody knows, and some people even know the words to, and that is The House of the Rising Sun by The Animals. Or actually, well, it's traditional, technically. It's technically a traditional song arranged in this context by Alan Price, recorded by The Animals on their self-titled album in 1964. We had a 3-hour session booked, did 2 takes of House of the Rising Sun in 15 minutes, completely live, in mono, but it kept take 2 and made the rest of the album in the remaining 2¾ of an hour, recalled producer Mickey Most of the session that gave him a career. It's one of the greatest keyboard solos of all time, if not the best. Ellen wrote it. Beautiful soul jazz feel on that Vox organ. I can remember putting 2 minutes and 86 seconds and 68 seconds on one single. As long as they saw it was 2, it was okay. 3 and they got worried. The song was a traditional folk song about a brothel, and the lyric caused some radio stations to stay away from the track. However, the performance was so strong that most stations turned a blind ear to the track and it became an international number one hit. The success was not for everybody. The Animals were known for their internal volatility, and keyboard player Ellen Price in particular was unhappy with topping the charts. Essentially, it was all the product. It was a result of a conflict of interest, he told Goldmine magazine. We had a missionary zeal about blues music, and it felt particularly that Mickey Most was attempting a homogenies sweeten, make it accessible for the mass market, which is understandable if you're the producer, but aggravating if you're the artist. As I say, the Animals had a particular contempt of themselves as a band, and there was an anarchic spirit which was being flattened by commercial designs, attributes, and needs. Price left the band shortly after. The Animals and The House of the Rising Sun.
My
the Animals and the House of the Rising Sun on YEU Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM here at 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, with me, your host, Seth Tetley Jones. Next, we have an honourable mention for the fellow who founded that glorious festival in Taranaki, WOMAD, namely Peter Gabriel and his track Sledgehammer from 1986. Peter Gabriel's most light-hearted album was written during one of his darkest days, the collapse of his first marriage, as Gabriel navigated the jungle of analysts, self-help gurus and therapists. His ear was turned to Africa. He'd already started recording African artists, especially Senegal's superstar Youssou N'Dour. Gabriel was also keenly interested in electronic music and American R&B. The So sessions were notable, if only because they featured the coolest musicians from three continents: Laurie Anderson, Wayne Jackson, Nile Rodgers, Larry Klein, Bill Laswell, Tony Levin, Richard T, Jerry Marossa from America, P.P. Arnold, Jim Carr, Kate Bush, Stuart Copeland from Europe, and Jama Korea, Manu Ketch, and Youssou N'Dour from Africa. Sledgehammer was one of the most fun... is the most fun Gabriel has ever had on a record. The lyric is a slightly quirky take on an R&B song, and from that premise, Gabriel and the co-producer Daniel Lowness loaded up layers of song meaning to create a new... Actually, speaking of that particular producer, we have him doing a duet with Bono coming up in a not too very long time. Loaded up layers of sound meaning to create a new type of blue-eyed soul. Accompanied by a groundbreaking video, Sledgehammer was a massive hit single and gave Gabriel a whole new audience. The sound and the groove became industry standard for some time to come. It seemed as though it would be possible to make music that had the joy of the 60s soul and the depth and experimentation that would keep musicians from going into their middle age. For a moment, it so looked like the future. "We had mutually decided on a philosophy of the record," said Lowness. "We would incorporate a playfulness and a humanness, and I thought it was important for Peter to be very clear with some of these songs." And this is Peter Gabriel and his song, Sledgehammer.
Could
Waiheke Radio. That was Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel. And this is 1001 Songs. And I am Seth Tetley Jones. Live Forever by Oasis from their album Definitely Maybe. Oasis charged out of Manchester, full of attitude. They harked back to the glory days of Empire, when the Englishness of the Faces and the Kinks was forgiven because they represented the true spirit of the English. The Oasis were prophets of cool Britannia, proud to be English and not terribly educated. The Gallagher brothers were naturals. They loved being at the tabloids. Noel could write a classic song, just like Ringing a Bell, and Liam could sing with Wounded Passion. Live Forever was their anthem, a manifesto of the promise of good times. If you're on the dole in writing songs, you're not going to write about how crap your life is, because there you already live that life. You want to write about how great life could be if you're a rock and roll star, said Noel. Damon Albarn from Blur and Brett Anderson from Suede write songs about going to the dogs and being pantomime horses, which is all very well, but it doesn't mean fuck all to me. It means nothing to 99% of the population. It's too self-centered, too me. And that's why those bands never make it in America, because it's just not universal enough. I'm not mithered about this or that, or being a sex symbol or the voice of a generation. All I'm asked about is getting down alongside Ray Davies, Morrissey, Mick Mar, Jagger and Richards, Lennon, McCartney, Pete Townsend, Paul Weller, and Burt Bacharach. Well, he had his work cut out for him anyway. This is... I would ask at this point for a little bit of... For a little bit of a ponder this, because this is what you're meant to do on radio. Before I put the song on, I'm supposed to say, ponder this! Do you think he's got there? Do you think he's up there with Ray Davies and Morrissey and Marr and Jagger and Richards and Lennon McCartney and Pete Townsend and Paul Weller and Burt Bacharach? Or do you think he isn't? Ponder that. The other thing you're supposed to say on radio is, this is Oasis and Live Forever. And then you don't read the bit out that says 4 minutes and 36 seconds next to it. However, that is what it says. Actually, incidentally, The House of the Rising Sun by The Animals, it said 2 minutes and 68 seconds, which, according to my calculations, is equivalent to 3 minutes and 8 seconds. But on this track, it says 4 minutes and 31 seconds. And so maybe this was that was the first take. I was just thinking about that just now. But anyway, you keep going with Oasis and Live Forever.
Maybe I don't really wanna know how you got engrossed, 'cause I just wanna fly. Lately, did you ever feel the pain in the morning rain? I soaked you to the bone. Maybe I just wanna fly.
That was Oasis with Live Forever on Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM, and on www.waiheke-radio.org.nz for live streaming. 1001 songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, and the stories, and the secrets behind them. Seth Tetley Jones, Hunters and Collectors, Say Goodbye, perhaps the most direct song about sexual revolution. Say Goodbye is powered by magnificent rumble of John Archer's bass guitar and Mark Seymour's refrain, "You don't make me feel like I'm a woman anymore." People have run out of things to say about the power struggle between men and women, Seymour told me in 1986. This is Seymour told Toby Creswell in 1986. You'll notice that he occasionally does do a little bit of name dropping just to show that, yes, this is what he told me, because I'm just always mingling with all these music, incredible music stars. In fact, actually, the main reason I put them in there is because I talked to them. I think they're quite wonderful, and I did talk to them. So I'm going to put in here just casually that I did talk to them. Yeah. Anyway, the fact is, Seymour told Toby Creswell in 1986 that he wanted to write a lyric that expressed having gone through his whole process of negotiation, organizing the relationship so that it was all running smoothly, and suddenly, one day, the man looks up from his newspaper and realizes he hasn't been giving her what she needs, and she's pissed off about it. The most basic, fundamental thing you've forgotten about because of setting up your domestic environment. The song became an instant classic, especially as a climax in the Hunters' incendiary live performances. The group, by this stage, was just coming into its own, having flung off their pretensions of the early years in search of that sound that reflected the largely male Australian audiences. Although they set their sights on talking to the common punter, Hunters were too eclectic a bunch to ever really cut straight rock songs. The tension between ambition and their musical limitations is what made them exceptional, and that and the notion that you could write a pub rock song with a feminist perspective. The whole thing, song, is a mixture of images, said Seymour. One conversation I heard through a wall, and another is having my girlfriend jump on top of me and grind her finger into my breastbone. It's pretty funny. It's ironic. It's even more ironic when you get 1,000 blokes screaming it at the top of their voices. And this is Hunters and Collectors, and Say Goodbye. We'll be right back. Hunters and Collectors, and Say Goodbye. That was 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. For another week, there's my show, and it is on every Monday night at 8 p.m. and every Saturday at 2 p.m. You can also find it online at www.waihiradio.org.nz.